The following audio is from Midtown Fellowship in Columbia, South Carolina. If you're interested in becoming a part of our extended family, visit midtowncolumbia.com/partner.
Morning, Midtown Lexington. How we doing? Everybody good? Yeah? Good to see you guys. My name is John Ludovina. I am one of our Midtown pastors, but I normally hang out at our downtown church where I do a lot of the teaching and preaching down there. So it's really good to be with you this morning. We are in week 7 of our series through the book of Proverbs. If you've got a Bible, you can go ahead and open up to Proverbs chapter 11. It'll take us a little while to get there. We're going to be kind of all over the book this morning, but I'll put most of it on the screen. Eventually, we will kind of anchor down and root out of Proverbs chapter 11. It's so good to see familiar faces for those of you who were downtown before Lexington planted. For some of us who have been in life group together before back in the day, good to see you guys in the back. I see you back there. Love your face. So throughout the series of Proverbs, what we've been looking at, Proverbs concerns itself with this big idea of wisdom, this Hebrew word chokmah. If you remember from early on, I just like to say it over and over again. I think you should make a practice of that, saying the word chokmah. It's a fun word to say. And the idea of chokmah is that it's not just about making wise decisions. It's not just about moral rights and wrongs. It's about how do we live and build a beautiful life the way that God designed for life to be lived. Have y'all been enjoying the series so far? Yeah, good. It's been helpful. How about last week? I think Adam was out here preaching on sloth. That sermon is brutal and good, like in a good way. After I heard it downtown, I went out and mowed my yard like 4 times that week, just so I wouldn't be guilty of sloth. Today I think will by far be your favorite sermon in this Proverbs series, because today we're talking about your money. We're going to talk about wisdom and wealth. Bailey and Brandon said they were scared and they didn't want to, so they had me come out. That's not true at all. But I'm really excited about it because the book of Proverbs has a ton of really helpful stuff to say about our wealth. Before we dive into that, let me just tell you a little bit more about myself when it comes to money. Historically, I am terrible with money. I don't know about you. I tend to be good at math, bad at money. Good at spending money, bad at all the other things you might want to do with money. Saving, planning, tracking. Like I am capable of making a working budget and then putting it in the trash can to never look at it ever again. That's just kind of how I was wired growing up. And God did a couple really gracious things in my life that I'm very thankful for. At a young age, I watched my oldest sister get into tens of thousands of dollars of credit card debt right out of school and then have to struggle her way out of that. And I watched the tension that created for her life and between her and my parents. And me and my sister are wired very similarly. And so God used that moment to really teach me and to grab my attention, and he used it to protect me from a lot of credit card debt that could have really jacked up my life. I'm very thankful for that, even though she obviously had to go through some pain. The second thing that God really did that happened for me when I was in college, I became really close friends with a guy named Chris Kakaris. If you guys don't know Chris, he's another one of our pastors who is, he oversees all of the finances for our family of churches. He also tends to be out here checking your kids into Kid Town almost every week. So parents, you do know Chris, whether you think you know him or not. He's wearing the green polo and looking fly as always doing that. I cannot tell you how much Jesus has grown me through my friendship with Chris. And then a third thing that God used to grow me a lot was getting married and having kids. And suddenly, for the first time in my life, I really saw the direct impact that my spending had on other people, on other people's financial security and their financial well-being, and on how do we actually plan out for things I want to be true for my kids someday if I can't get my spending under control. And so I've grown a lot, but I'm not naturally gifted. So if you're not naturally gifted, I think we'll relate a lot. Also, it wouldn't really be surprising if you would say that you struggle with money some, because by tendency, by statistics, this is something that Americans tend to be terrible at. I'll just give you a few statistics that I found. The most recent survey I could find said that 49% of Americans are currently living paycheck to paycheck, and that if anything happens and the next paycheck doesn't come in, they're in an emergency. A 2016 study found that 34% of Americans have no savings for emergencies whatsoever, not a dollar. If you change that number to under 1,000, the number is like 60, 70%. It's crazy high. The average American household that has credit card debt has $16,000 in credit card debt. So no savings plus $16,000 in the hole is not a great picture. It's not extra good if you're under the age of 35. Real quick, show of hands if you're under the age of 35. I think that's safe to say that's a majority of us in the room. Americans under 35 have a personal savings rate of negative 2%. That's an anti-savings rate. It's not a savings rate. An ongoing series of surveys has consistently shown for decades now that money is the number one cause of stress for Americans. The number one thing that causes us anxiety. A 2008 study found that money was the number one factor that divorced couples listed for their divorce. 93% of the couples had it as one of the top two factors in their divorce. The second closest thing was communication that only 66% of couples said was one of the top two things. They happen to be wrong. Communication's a bigger deal than they think, including communication about money. But either way, their impression was that money was one of the biggest things that busted up and destroyed their marriage. And so as Proverbs concerns itself with wisdom and how to build this beautiful life, it's not surprising, and you've probably noticed this as you've been reading the book of Proverbs, that the book of Proverbs talks about our money a lot. It also happens to be particularly culturally relevant to us in a culture that's not very great at handling our money. The book of Proverbs is full of all kinds of helpful warnings. You get warnings like it warns us against unjustly earning money, whether that's through deception or oppression, treating employees poorly. It warns us about foolishly spending money. It warns us about debt and becoming enslaved to the people we've borrowed from. It warns us about the folly of get-rich-quick schemes and trying to make a lot of money really fast, but not actually building a long-haul ability to have steady income for your life. And Proverbs is also, as well as warnings, it's full of a lot of really helpful instructions. It tells us to work hard and to earn money diligently, patiently, and honestly. It instructs us to spend money carefully. It instructs us to save and invest our money responsibly and to share money with lavish generosity, to give freely. It's all summed up, I think, in one command that we get kind of early in the book of Proverbs. It's Proverbs chapter 3, verse 9. You can flip there, or this one will be on the screen, and you can just read it with me there. Proverbs 3, 9 says, "Honor the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of all your crops." So right at near the beginning of the book, one of the things that Proverbs tells us right out of the bat is that wealth is not just a practical issue in your life. Money is not just practical. Money is a spiritual issue. It's a heart issue that involves a necessary command to honor God with it. I love how it says with the first fruits of all of your crops. We don't tend to be quite as agrarian of a culture as the people that wrote the book of Proverbs and it was written to. But the idea here with first fruits is that every year there were certain plants that would have a big season of harvest. You did a whole lot of work throughout the year to make plants grow healthy, to provide a bunch of fruit. And when harvest came, that was payday. That's when all of your hard work is paying off and you're going to get in the fruits of your labor, literally. And the Proverbs, as the scriptures do over and over again, says to honor the Lord with the first fruits of your harvest. The concept here, if you can try to imagine this, is you've been working your tail off all year and it's finally payday. And the first thing the scriptures say to do with your money when it comes to payday is to honor God with it. Now, here's the thing about honoring God with the first fruits, with tithing or giving the first fruits to God. It required a good bit of trust. Because when the first fruits of the harvest come in, you don't yet know how the rest of the harvest is going to go. But you're giving him the first cut before you know how the rest is going to shake out. So there's an open-handedness in honoring God with your first fruits. There's an open-handedness that says, God, before I even know the rest of my financial situation and how that's going to work out, I'm going to trust you with it first. And the idea of honoring God as the first fruits is it's this reminder to us that everything that I have is his. Everything that I've worked for is his. In fact, Deuteronomy 8 is going to tell us that your ability to earn wealth is a gift from God. The wealth that you have worked so hard to earn, all of that came. Your mental ability, your physical ability, the opportunity to have a job, all of that was a gift from God. And so the tithe, the giving, the honoring with the first fruits is saying, God, I'm reminding myself that this is all yours first before it's mine. So you get the first cut. It's a reminder to us that my wealth has purpose beyond just my life and comfort. Before I do anything else with my harvest, I'm going to remind myself that my money is about more than just me. My money is about more than just me having the luxuries and the toys and the extravagant lifestyle that I want. Part of my money exists for God's kingdom to advance. Part of my money is to see other people get loved through the harvest that he brings me. It's not just to take care of me, it's to take care of the people God's put around me. And all of this honoring God with the first fruits was a reminder of that idea. Money is spiritual, it is not just practical. And if we're gonna be freed up from a broken American perspective on finances and freed up to be able to obey this command in Proverbs 3:9, we're gonna have to know three financial principles. And that's what I'm gonna spend our time walking through today. Three financial principles that all come straight out of the book of Proverbs. The first one is this, financial principle number one, wealth is a good gift. Wealth is a good gift. I'm gonna put a few different references up there. You can write those down or you can try to flip around with me if you want, but I'm just gonna read straight through three different Proverbs that talk about this idea. Proverbs 10, 4 through 5. A slack hand causes poverty, but the hand of the diligent makes rich. He who gathers in summer is a prudent son, but he who sleeps in harvest is a son who brings shame. It's acknowledging and honoring someone who works hard to bring in wealth. Proverbs 13, 21, adversity pursues sinners, but the righteous will be rewarded with prosperity. I was just reading Proverbs 15 today because it's the 15th of the month, and I was just, you know, seeing there, this was a reminder again that wealth is oftentimes the reward for hard work. Proverbs 21, 20, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. Proverbs 21, 20 says, the wise man who honors God and works hard will have enough. He'll have some in savings. He'll be taken care of, but it's actually foolish and sinful to devour everything you get as soon as you get it. This is just a quick sampling of the Proverbs, but over and over, the book of Proverbs connects hard work, insight, creativity, and discipline with prospering financially. Now remember, Proverbs is not saying this will always happen every single time like this. It's not saying you can't ever find a counterexample. It's just saying this is the general way that it works. If you work hard, honor God with your money, if you're diligent and creative and insightful and ingenuous, you will generally be rewarded with wealth. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Proverbs describes wealth as a good gift to be worked hard for, received with gratitude, and used for godly purposes. It's a good gift to be worked hard for, received with gratitude, and used for godly purposes, which depending on where you grew up and how you grew up, some of you may find this surprising to be in a church reading from the scriptures that money is sometimes celebrated as a good thing. This was kind of true for me. And there's a reason for this. There are a lot of strong warnings throughout the scriptures. The Bible has a lot of warnings about the dangers of money, the dangers of the love of money. Proverbs includes many of these warnings. There's plenty of them. And these dangers can be taught in an imbalanced measure where the impression becomes that God and the Bible just really kind of hate money, which is not the case. It's an overstatement of the dangers. This idea can kind of become that the Christian thing to do is to try to just avoid money, try not to think about it too much, because if you think about it too much, then you care too much about it. Try not to have very much. Being poor is extra spiritual, if you didn't know. Having money, having things is evil. Sometimes you'll even hear people refer to this as the poverty gospel. And they'll point to Jesus not having a lot of money. So clearly that's the best way to do it because Jesus didn't have a lot of money. But he also ran a ministry and had money coming in that was being taken care of in certain ways. As well as this kind of weird Christian concept that we get sometimes in imbalance, culturally speaking, there can be kind of this growing sentiment in our country that if you have wealth, you're the problem. This is kind of the weird sentiment that if you have money, you're doing something wrong. And that is not at all a biblical idea. God invented wealth There are plenty of biblical examples where someone obeys and follows God faithfully, and they're rewarded with great wealth. I'm looking at Abraham, Isaac, David, Solomon. Obedient, faithful following of God throughout the scriptures oftentimes leads to wealth. The issue is not whether or not you have wealth. The issue is what do you do with it, and what did you do to get it? Those are the issues of real morality and spirituality that come up with money. How did you get your money, and what do you do with it once you have it? But having it is not the problem, because wealth is a good gift. I just need some of you in the room to hear me very clearly. Learning about money, making money, saving money wisely, both for emergencies and for short-term goals that you want to save up to be able to afford, as well as investing money responsibly for the future, all of these things can be beautiful, godly pursuits to honor the Lord with your wealth, because money is a good gift. In fact, this is one of my favorite things. Chris and I got to teach a personal finance seminar back this past January, and one of my favorite things is that actually, if you will save and invest your money wisely, oftentimes you'll end up with more later to be generous with, and some of you are cutting off your future ability to be generous because you're always trying to give away so much right here and now that you're never actually able to build a stable lifestyle, and then whenever you're in an emergency, everyone else has to be generous to you because you never actually built your money faithfully according to the Proverbs. That's a miss. That's a mishandling of your resources, and it's a miss of the idea that money is a good gift. To ignore biblical and Proverbs instructions about money is foolish, and we do so to our own detriment, because God isn't anti-money. But money can become anti-God. And this is our second financial principle that we see throughout the book of Proverbs. Number one, money is a good gift. Number two, wealth is a bad God. Number one, wealth is a good gift. Number two, wealth is a bad God. And just like I said, wealth can be a good gift. It also can become detrimental when it becomes a God in your life. Wealth becomes anti-God when we elevate it to the place that only God deserves, is worthy of, and can fulfill in our lives. Let me show you this from the Proverbs. Well, I think I had you flip to Proverbs 11. If you want, you can just look back one chapter to chapter 10. And look here in verse 15 and 16. It'll also be on the screen. We're going to camp on this for a second. Proverbs 10, 15. A rich man's wealth is his strong city. The poverty of the poor is their ruin. The wage of the righteous leads to life, the gain of the wicked to sin. All right, look at that. A rich man's wealth is his strong city. So there's a picture being painted here that we don't quite understand, because our cities and our other areas don't work quite like they did. But if you scroll back several hundred years to ancient cities, what you would find is you'd find a city surrounded by a wall and all of the houses for anyone who could possibly afford it. You wanted a house inside the walls of that city. The reason why is that cities were the ultimate place of security. If your house was inside the wall, if you were in the walls of the city, you were protected from wild animals. Wild animals couldn't get through the walls and through the gates and come attack you. You were protected from invaders to a certain degree if the walls were strong enough. You were protected from vigilantes. So if you lived in the city and you did something wrong, then a legal council of some kind would decide what your fate was going to be. But if you lived outside of the city and you did something wrong, then a blood avenger just came and killed you. There was protection, there was security as well. Because of that security, those who had wealth all lived in the city, and so it became the desirable place to live. It was the source of security and a source of significance. The most important thinkers, the most important artisans, the most important people in society lived in the city. And so if you could, anyone who could chose to live inside the walls of the city, because that was where their security and their significance came from. Now look back at verse 15. What does it say? It doesn't just say that the rich live in the city, does it? Look what it says. A rich man's wealth is his strong city. You see that? What this Proverbs is saying is that if you're not careful, if you elevate money to the place of God in your life, then money can become your ultimate source of security and significance, just like ancient cities were the ultimate source of security and significance for these people. the rich man's wealth is his strong city. This gets even clearer a few chapters later in Proverbs 18, 10 through 11. It's a contrast. Look at this. The name of the Lord is a strong tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. The godly thing is to see God as your tower, as your walls, as your security, as your significance. Here's the contrast. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it an unscalable wall. I love that phrasing. They imagine it an unscalable wall. I was actually just back home with my wife's family, and I was talking to my brother-in-law, who's a big finance guy, and we were having this conversation. He was like, well, I mean, like, money is security, you know? Like, if you just have enough money, then you're safe. And like, I'm going on a trip to Europe, and I want to have enough money that I can get myself home no matter what. Like, that is security. And I was like, yes, and not ultimate security. There are things so far outside of your control. None of us is more than one phone call away from our lives being devastated and your money having no ability to protect you from that phone call. There are things that can happen in your life that no amount of money can protect you from. Because money has a certain sense of security and significance. It is a good gift, but it's not an ultimate security. It's not an ultimate sense of significance. So the question becomes, is your ultimate source of security found in your wealth or is it found in God? If it's found in wealth, then wealth has become your functional God. This is what Jesus teaches when he says you can't serve both God and money. He says only one can be your ultimate source of security and strength. And if you think that money is your God, if you trust in your riches, then you're going to have a false sense of security. You're going to imagine your city to be unscalable when the truth is all manner of things can destroy your walls and crush you. If wealth is your God and you don't have it, then poverty will be your ruin. That's the other thing that chapter 10, 15 says. If wealth is your God and you don't have it, then poverty will be your ruin. It's not just I'm without and I need help right now. It's I am crushed. Who am I without my functional God of money? If you go to the next chapter where we started, I had you placed in Proverbs 11, over and over, Proverbs 11 describes what else will happen if money becomes your God. This is Proverbs 11, verse 1. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. If when wealth is your God, you'll give up your integrity to get it. That's what this verse is saying. A false balance, it was a way to swindle people. So in the market, someone would bring you, they would come to buy grain from you, and you have your 1 pound weight marked as 2 pounds, and you make them pay twice as much as they actually owe you because they think they're buying 2 pounds of grain from you and they're only buying 1 pound. It's a way to rip people off, and you'll be tempted to do this if you think you need money. If you think you need it to be your city, to be your security, to be your significance, so people had to get hurt in the process, but I needed the money. You'll trade in your integrity and honoring God to get it. You'll rip people off. Well, skip down to verse 4. Riches do not profit in the day of wrath, but righteousness delivers from death. Skip down to verse 7. When the wicked dies, his hope will perish, and the expectation of wealth perishes too. And then one more down in verse 28. Whoever trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous will flourish like a green leaf. It says, when wealth is your God, your whole focus will become living your best life in the here and now, and you'll lose sight of eternity. You'll lose sight of the eternal God who made you and made you to enjoy him forever. If you treat money like a god, then all you're going to start caring about is what is here right now. Riches don't profit in the day of wrath, is what verse 4 said. That's talking about judgment day. It's a reminder that this life is not all there is. This life is a warm-up, a prequel for eternity to come. And when you know that, you ask different questions. When you're living your life in light of eternity, you ask different questions. You ask questions like this. Instead of asking very American money questions like, how much do I have? How much can I get? How can I get more? What are all the luxuries and bucket list experiences that I would pay anything for? Instead of those kind of questions, your questions shift to eternal-minded questions like, what is my life really amounting to? What difference am I making in the world? Who am I helping, both in the present and in the long term? How am I honoring the Lord with my life and my wealth that he has given to me? How am I making eternal impact with the resources that God has given to me, both my wealth and my time and my energy and my gifts? Those are judgment day questions. Those are questions that have eternity in mind in terms of how I'm living here and now. But when wealth is your God, it blinds you to these questions that matter most. Wealth sucks you into a constant life of consumption. My whole life is here and now. It's about the here and now. It's about me living my best life now possible. It goes like this. It's, I've earned more, so now I can spend more, and spending more is fun, but eventually that fun wears off, so now I have to earn more to get the high of spending even more than I spent last time. And some of you will notice this, that as you get older, it's not that the spending changes, it's just the amount of spending changes. Right? So I remember when I bought my engagement ring for my wife, that was the largest purchase I had ever made in my life at that point. And then now we've been married 8 years, and like I don't even think about a few thousand dollars for countertops, let's just do it. Yeah, of course. And that's not true. Like, I work for Midtown, but you get the concept, right? Like, you get the idea of how that might be for those of you with real jobs, okay? That's great. After a while, your spending starts to outpace your earning, and now you have to earn more just to keep up. And no longer can you think about questions of, God, is this what you made me to do? And is this the right job fit for me? I have to live for the paycheck because I have to keep up with the spending practices that I've built in over the past few decades. On and on it goes, and all the time you feel strapped. That's the worst part of it. You never feel like you have enough, no matter how much you have. All the time you feel like, I just don't have quite enough to keep up. All the time you feel like there's not a whole lot that I have for the people around me. I'm just barely making ends meet. No matter how much your income level is, because your standard of living just keeps inflating to the level of income that you have when wealth is your God. I'll give you a couple indicators that wealth has become your God. If you find yourself obsessing about your financial stability, like in a daily way, there's a good chance that maybe you're thinking wealth is your security instead of God being secure, your security. If you find yourself talking about your money or the new thing that you just bought all the time, if you find that just being on your mind frequently, if you daydream about the next thing that you're going to buy, when you have just a spare minute, you start just browsing the internet because shopping is in your pocket now. It's amazing, right? This is actually one of the saddest things I read about America a while back, is that shopping is the number one hobby in America. We need better hobbies. That's so sad. Rather than go do the thing, because we didn't save any money to buy the thing, so we just go shop for the things that we can't afford, and then we don't buy them, then we can't do the thing, and we just shop some more. If you get a raise and your first thought is, yay, now I can spend all this more money on me, then maybe wealth is your God and not God as your God. If you always feel like generosity is just out of reach, like you know that you're a very generous person, it's just you don't have quite enough money to prove it. But you're very generous. You can't be quite as generous as you want to because I just don't have quite enough. That's an indicator that wealth is your God and you think it's your city. You think it's your security and your significance as opposed to understanding God is my security and my significance. I'll give you one more from chapter 11, verse 24. Just look at the end of it, the second half of it. There's another who withholds what he should give and only suffers want. When wealth is your God, it never delivers on its promises. It keeps lying to you, saying just a little bit more and you'll have enough, but it's never true. The Proverbs here says there's somebody who takes everything he gets and he uses it all for himself. He keeps it all, he spends it all on himself, he devours it all, and he still suffers want. It's never enough. It's never enough. The American lie of money, the money lie of money throughout history is more, 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 just a little bit more, just a little bit more, and the Proverbs is telling us it will never be enough. There is no amount of more. Rich people do not think they are rich. They think they are poorer than the people just a little bit richer than them. It's never enough. And I love when sometimes rich people will be honest enough to admit this truth. There's a quote from Jim Carrey. I love Jim Carrey. If you're familiar with his movies, I think his movies are hilarious. I think his comedy is hilarious. Very, you know, kind of understated, subtle kind of humor. And there's something that Jim Carrey said. That's a joke. He's ridiculously popular. Okay, y'all got it. Great. This is a Jim Carrey quote. He says, I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that it's not the answer. I love that. It's a rich man saying, you can come have all my riches and my fame and you'll find out it doesn't actually answer what it promised to answer. It's never enough. Or the way that another proverb said that someday eternity comes and all the promises of wealth perish. Everything you were chasing after with your money, you find out it had a shelf life. Money cannot buy what actually matters most. Okay, before we go to the third financial principle, I just want to synchronize those two and put them together. I want to make sure that we're getting, you got to have both of these to have a Proverbs wisdom perspective on wealth. Okay, so what was the first one? Wealth is a good gift. And then the second one, wealth is a bad God. And you got to have both of those together. All right, let me just try to synchronize those as quickly as I can. Having money does not make you evil. Not having money does not make you good, and vice versa. You catching that? Okay? There are wicked, deceptive ways that plenty of people use to get rich. There are wicked, deceptive ways to get rich, and there are righteous, holy, godly ways to build wealth and use it for God's purposes as a good gift. In like kind, there are plenty of wicked, sinful patterns that will cause you to be poor. Proverbs talks about them all the time. And also, there are faithful, godly people who try very hard to honor God with their wealth, and calamity strikes, and they end up in poverty anyway. And Proverbs addresses this as well. The point is, as long as money isn't your God, you will be okay either way. As long as money isn't your God. There's this prayer in Proverbs 30 that I think sums it all up. Proverbs 30, 8 and 9, it'll be on the screen. The writer of Proverbs says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches." This is a prayer. "God, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God." This prayer, I love the balance in it. I love this sense that the person praying this prayer understands that enough is actually a category. This is not a person being driven through life by the false promises of more. This is a person who has come to understand wealth is a good gift, God, but it's a bad God. Give me enough. He kind of echoes how Jesus later in the Lord's Prayer teaches to pray for our daily bread. God, give me enough for what I need. Man, make all my needs. Don't let me get so rich that I would become arrogant and say, "Who is the Lord?" This is actually, it's the exact same thing that Pharaoh asks when Moses comes to Pharaoh and says, "I'm here to tell you to let God's people go." And Pharaoh says, "Who is God?" He's so wealthy. His city in his mind is so strong that he has unscalable walls around him. And God brings a couple little curses to say, "I can get past those walls. I can turn your river into blood. I can wreck your life, man. Money is a bad God. It's a good gift." He says, "Don't let me get so rich. Don't let me be duped by the false security and the arrogance that comes from having wealth. And also, don't let me be so poor that I start thinking that stealing is my only way to survive, and therefore I dishonor your name by stealing to try to provide." Here's the point. When you know that wealth is a good gift but a bad God, it frees you up to actually practice contentment. When you know that wealth is a good gift but a bad God, it frees you up for contentment. This prayer is a direct confrontation to the lie of money that constantly tells us we need more, 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 more. And here's another thing that you'll see as a little pattern throughout Proverbs. When you know that wealth is a good gift but a bad God, it frees you up to see all the things in life that are better than wealth. I just want to point this out really quickly, and then we'll go to the third point. Proverbs actually says there's a lot of things that are better than wealth. I'll give you a few samplings. Proverbs 3:14 says wisdom is better than gold. It's this kind of constant comparison that the Proverbs use. It says wisdom, way better than gold. It'd be better to know how to build a beautiful life than to have a lot of money and not have a clue what to do with it. Wisdom is better than gold. Proverbs 22:1 says your integrity, a good reputation, a good name is better than great riches. It'd be better for you to be an integritous person, a person who's self-aware and knows yourself and knows that you're not cheating God and cheating yourself, a person who confesses their sin and humbly lives in the fear of the Lord, than to have great riches. Proverbs 15:16-17 says that healthy relationships, both with God and with other people, are better than great treasure. Better than great treasure. Proverbs 15:17 actually says it'd be better to just eat a meal of herbs than to have broken, troubled relationships and a fattened ox, which is a picture of wealth. It's saying it'd be better to be a vegetarian. I don't understand. I'm just kidding. If you're vegetarian, that's good. I should learn some things from you about self-control and gluttony. The point of all of it is that the things we need most in life cannot be bought. Love, wisdom, right relationships, closeness with God. The things that people get to the end of their life and say, I wish I had more of this. I wish I had invested more in the people throughout my life. I wish I had been more humble and learned more how to align my life with God's design. Love, wisdom, relationships. These things are worth more than gold. And it would be foolish for you to spend your whole life chasing money and sacrificing these things to get it. That's the overall picture. Financial principle number three. The best way to true wealth is to give a lot away. The best way to true wealth is to give a lot of wealth away, to give a lot of money away. And I want to show you this from Proverbs 11. One more time. We'll be right back where we read last time. Proverbs 11, verse 24 through 25, after you write that down. The way to true wealth is to give a lot away. This is Proverbs 11, 24 and 25. We read the second half of verse 24 earlier. Now I want to read the whole thing in context. One gives freely, yet grows all the richer. Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered. I just want to read that again to you. I want you to hear this proverb. I hope it will stick with you. One gives freely. You know what it takes to give freely? It takes contentment. It takes an open hand. It takes knowing that your money is not your city. It's not your security. It's not your significance. One gives freely. He's giving all the time. He gives freely, yet grows all the richer. It's a paradox, isn't it? Another withholds what he should give and only suffers want. Whoever brings blessing will be enriched, and one who waters will himself be watered. There's a wisdom paradox here, where Proverbs says that the more you give away, the richer you will become when it comes to true wealth, when it comes to what really matters, when it comes to richness that matters for eternity, what Jesus would call being rich towards God later on in Luke. How is that? It's because nothing teaches and reinforces for us more that money is a good gift and a bad God than giving. Giving trains us and reminds us and teaches us over and over again that money is a good gift and a bad God. Giving is the practice of opening up our hands and making sure that we've not clutched onto our riches and put our trust in our wealth. Giving says, nope, I'm not trusting in my wealth, and therefore I am free to give it away. One gives freely. I'm content with what God gives me. He's giving me plenty. He's meeting all my needs. I'm trying to lower my bills. I'm not trying to have my lifestyle expand eternally. I'm trying to live as small as possible so that as much as possible is freed up to give away. That's what I'm trying to do. And yeah, there are needs. I've got my kids have needs. I'm going to clothe them. I'm going to make sure my kids don't go to school naked. But whenever possible, I want to have money to give away to someone who can't afford clothes for their kids. Because my money has bigger purpose than just me and my family and us living the quality of life that we want to live. I want to have a lot freed up to give. I want to make sure I'm not putting my trust for security and significance and worth in it. Giving money helps reinforce our trust in God. Every time we open our hand and give, it reminds us that God is our city, that God is my security, God is my significance, and God is the real giver of every gift I have, including all of my wealth. And when your ultimate security is in God, who gave everything up for you, it sets you up for incredible generosity that you never thought possible. If the God that we worship, if the God of the Bible, the God who sent his son Jesus to a cross, is an incredibly generous God, which he is, who's been giving you life, breath, gifts, talents, ability to make wealth your whole life, when you really are trusting in him, it frees you up to open your hand more than you thought possible. I was talking to a friend of mine who just told me that there was a single guy in his life group who came up to him and said, hey man, I want to give $2,500 to a single mom in the church fam. My friend's words were this, I'll just quote him. He said, that mug is not rich at all. Mug meaning his friend for the over 45 crowd. That mug is not rich at all. Just had extra income this summer and gave it all away. That's beautiful. You know what that is? That's a man with his hand wide open. I got a bonus this summer. I made some extra income. And my first question was not, yay, what new toy can I get for me? How can I increase my standard or quality of living? His first thought was, man, that single mom is really struggling. I want to give it all to her. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's honoring the Lord with your wealth, with the first fruits of your crops. Before I think about me, before I think about expanding my standard of living, my quality living, my vacation, my first thought is who has needs? How might God have purpose for this money to bless the people that he's put around me? There's this pastor named Tim Keller who you'll probably hear us quote a lot because he's smarter than we are and he says stuff really good. I want you to hear how he says this. He was talking about tithing in this specific sermon, but I still just loved what he said. Keller says, Jesus didn't save you by tithing his blood. And you live by his giving of everything. Jesus' cross means sacrificial giving. Don't you dare think that you're being wise about your money if your giving is not making a measurable difference in the way in which you live. If it's not making a measurable sacrificial difference in the way you do things, in the way you take your vacations, in the way in which you buy your clothes, in the way in which you live, you haven't brought a cross into your economic life. That's wisdom. Jesus Christ gave himself away. And look at his harvest. Me, you. Why are we gathered here? Why are we together? Why do we love each other? Why do we have each other? Because he got scattered and we're gathered. Now you go and do likewise. Keller says that a big purpose of the money that God gives you is to scatter it. That when you do, when your hand is free to scatter it for God's kingdom, you will never regret it. You will never be lacking. You will never, what you gather in harvest will never be less than you gave. You'll actually understand the true riches, the truest wealth of seeing your money bring life to other people and not just temporarily scratch an itch for more in your life. You ever notice that? You buy the new toy, it's really exciting. You buy the new countertops, you buy the new car, and it's nice for a couple months. Maybe a year, and then it gets dirty. Other people don't respect enough. They put their feet on the dashboard. What is wrong with people? Do you know how much I spend on that dashboard? It doesn't bring eternal joy. It doesn't last. It scratches an itch for a while. But there's a true wealth that will last for all eternity. And the proverb says, you want as much of that wealth as possible? Open up that hand as wide as you can, wider than you think you can. Open up that hand in keeping with Jesus, who opened up his hands and poured out not 10% of his blood, but all of his blood. Don't be looking for a rule to say, I've checked off the list. I've done my religious giving. That is not wisdom when it comes to giving. That's a starting point to train us to walk in a larger and larger life of generosity. I want to live large when it comes to giving stuff away. Here's how the Ludovinas do it. I'll just really quickly. We set up our budget with our tithe as the first line item. Before anything else, we want to honor the Lord with the first fruits of our crops. We have recurring monthly giving set up. I used to, when we first got married, I said, no, we have to write a check every time. It's important to write the check and to do the act of giving. And then we got to the end of a year and we'd given like 4 or 5 months out of the year and we're like, that's not working. Let's do the recurring thing because we forget a lot. So that's what we've done. If that's helpful for you, I hope you do that as well. Next, after the tithe, so we trust God first. God is our city. He's our security. After that, we put all of our bills and all of our utilities, the things that are really, you can't live without them, electricity, water, these types of things, and we have done what we can to try to make those as small as possible. Most of our marriage, we have lived without cable. I just want to put that out there. Cable is not a necessity to live. Now, that's hard for us as Americans, but it's not. Also, Netflix is cheaper and kind of better. Just saying. But either way, still not a utility. After the necessities, there are three categories where money can go. Your lifestyle, clothes to buy, how much entertainment, how much are we going to go out to eat, how much are we going to go on dates if you're married. Savings, stuff that you are saving for, both in the short term and in the long term. And number three, extra generosity. And we want to live in a tension between those three. Really, we're trying to make the entertainment, the lifestyle one, enough, small and enough so that we can grow the other two, because we think there's more life in saving wisely so that we're always in a position to help other people when emergency comes for them, as well as ourselves if emergency comes for us, and that we want to grow the generosity. So we have set people that we're supporting every month out of that generosity, those generosity accounts. And then we also have set aside money for spontaneous generosity when God presents the opportunity. So I don't want to get to that moment and go, oh no, I don't know if I have enough to give. I want to have already sacrificed it. I want to have already said, yep, that money has that purpose, because I want to scatter as much as is physically possible. Here's what I can tell you. In every act of giving, there won't necessarily be this warm, fuzzy feeling of, whoa, this is incredible. I trust God so much more now, and he's beautiful, and I see the light. That's not really how it works. The way that it works is over the years, having been married 8 years now, really trying to practice a lot of these principles for about 10, 12 years now, I am more and more convinced of God's constant faithfulness. He has never let us down. He has never called us to give an amount away that we thought was crazy and not taken care of us. And not just with wealth, but with wealth. But he's never failed to take care of us with people, with wisdom, with love, with relationship with him and with others. And that is the stuff that really matters most and money cannot buy. I'll just tell you one quick story. Before Erica and I got married, her mom wisely said that we had to put a budget together before we could get married. She squeezed 4 years of college down into five and did a little victory lap. And so before we wanted to get married before her fifth year of college. And her mom was like, that's crazy. You have to show me a budget or I'm not even going to consider it. And so I worked up a budget and I couldn't make it work. It didn't work. The numbers were not there. Over the first 9 months of our marriage while she was in school, we were going to be about negative $10,000 for those 9 months. And I didn't know what to do. I was pretty crushed. I was like, dang it. I don't know how to do this. This isn't going to work. And I just started praying about it, told some friends, hey, I don't know what to do about this. This is a situation. About a week later, I get a very random phone call from my dad, not the godliest of people in the world. It's caused a lot of pain for me and my family. I get a random phone call from my dad where he says, hey, John, just wanted to let you know, There's an extra $10,000 in your savings account set aside that's going to come to you on your wedding day. That's not a made-up story because I'm a preacher and I need stories like that. Like, that happened in my life. And I just started weeping at God's faithfulness, his ability to provide. You want to know the crazy part of it? And this part maybe, don't tell the IRS about this part because I think some bad accounting happened or something. Somehow, at the end of our first year of marriage, we had saved $10,000. I don't know how. That's the craziest part of it. God's never gonna fail you. He's never gonna not take care of you. Whether you're impoverished or as richer than you ever imagined, he will take care of you. He will provide people and family. He will provide because he is your city. So I don't know where you're at. Some of you aren't giving, and it's because money is your city and not God, and you need to start giving as a practice to train your heart to put its trust in God and not in your wealth. Some of you give once every 3 months or so, but you want to give all the time, but you just need to sign up for recurring online giving. That's what we had to do, and it's really helpful. Some of you are totally stressed out about money, and you don't even realize it, but part of the Christian practice of giving is one of God's plans to free you up from that stress you feel about your money, to train you that it's better to give it away and that what you gather in return, you will be richer than you imagined you could possibly be. Now, I do want to say this real quick before I pray and we head into communion. There are seasons where you and I will absolutely need financial help, and the Bible speaks into these really clearly. So we're talking about widows, orphans, if you're temporarily out of work, especially due to physical or mental injury or sickness, unforeseen financial just downfall that you had no idea coming. You did everything wise possible, but something just crushed you or your company. And in those seasons, it's actually the church's job to step in and take care of you. So if that is where you are at, please come tell us. And by us, I mean mostly Bailey and Brandon, because they're the ones who will be kind of pastoring you throughout that. We want to know. Your life group wants to know. They want to have the opportunity to give generously and help take care of you and show off God's love and his provision in that way. We can't know if you don't tell us, if you hide it. So if that's where you're at. But also, don't always be convincing yourself that you're in a season of need if you're not really. And the truth is, it's just time to start opening that hand and seeing what God can do. I'm going to pray for us, and then we're going to head into communion and singing. Father God, thank you so much for Jesus, who gave everything in our place. for Jesus who died on the cross, paying for our greed, paying for our foolishness, paying for our short-sightedness when it comes to money, God, praying for our idolatry, our false worship of money, thinking that money could be our security and significance. Thank you for Jesus who died and took our punishment for all the ways that we have trusted in money more than you. And thank you that Jesus' incredible act of sacrificial generosity, it pays for our lack of generosity and it empowers us and frees us up to live a life of contentment and to live a life of generosity, to operate in a category of enough. This is enough. I have enough. I do not constantly need more. I do not constantly need to be daydreaming about the next purchase or the next upgrade or the next toy. God, I pray for your Holy Spirit to open our eyes to see this stuff. I know it can be so uncomfortable and awkward, and well, my money's supposed to be private, and would you just help us reject all of those ideas and to walk boldly out into the light by the power of your gospel, empowered by your Spirit, to see where we are living foolishly with our money, to build a beautiful life financially, to save well, to invest well, and to give lavishly. And I pray that Lexington would be changed by the generosity of the people in this room, that people's eternities would be changed, that they would come to know who you are in part because they saw the sacrificial way that your people give. You always know that's not going to happen on our own, so I pray that would be motivated by sitting and resting in the gospel where Jesus gave everything to purchase us. And it just almost seems like he got the raw end of that deal. Yeah, but it sure does train us to try to walk in that kind of generosity. God, as we come take communion, let this be the reminder for us of the generosity, what it cost for you to purchase us back from sin. And let it be the motivation and the fuel for us to go and do likewise, to go and live sacrificially, to pour ourselves out, to open our hands, and to see how much your kingdom might grow and how much life might be brought through the wealth that you've given to us.